This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Many people ask me, is a prime rib roast prime quality? Not necessarily. Prime rib is just another name for a beef rib roast. You'll often see it written this way on restaurant menus. Prime rib is not a reference to the grade or quality of the meat. This is a little confusing since the top grade for beef is USDA prime. So you could have a USDA prime rib, or you could have a USDA choice prime rib. So remember, if you're looking for the top grade of beef, look for the letters USDA along with the word prime. Or if you want the next quality grade, look for USDA choice. It's almost as high in quality and is the grade sold in most stores. For more free information on buying meat, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Back to Rockport, Indiana.
No, you can't go back. I'll get the story on Old's Mobility. I've got to get a car. I've got to get a car to get a gal. Got to get a gal somehow. Now's the time. I'm in my prime. Got to get a gal right now. Got to get that car to get that gal. Got to get that gal. I feel no time to waste. Got to make haste. Got to get that gal.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you until 9 o'clock if you want to give us a call. We always love hearing from you. It's going to be at 855-915-WMFO. And for our main topic tonight, we're going to discuss how Derek blames millennials for the fall of the auto industry.
Well, I blame millennials for everything. This is just something else that the millennials...
this is just another thing we did.
This is just something else that the millennials have ruined, because what are the problems with your generation?
We only have one?
Well, no, I have a lot. but one of the problems with your generation is that you don't want to own anything. Yeah, have you noticed that about your generation? Like, you don't buy houses, you rent.
That's not out of desire. That's out of necessity.
You don't buy
cars.
We
can't afford to buy houses.
You Uber. No, well, you know what?
Excuse me. I own my car free and clear.
Oh, I know you do. I'm going to challenge that, too, because there would not be multi-million dollar state-of-the-art glass-walled condos rising faster than marijuana sales in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts if there was not a ready market of millennials to move in and occupy said buildings.
I mean, it's not millennials. It's not millennials that are moving in there. Millennials are moving.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. Millennials are moving into converted lofts where they share a bedroom with three other people because they're so hip and da 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 da. Trust me, I was surrounded by. I lived in the Arts District in LA. I was surrounded by millennials.
Maybe the Poe millennials that you're used to hanging around with are living bohemian style. But I have a good friend who will be here as part of our Christmas music battle in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, kids. December 12th. Mark your calendar. It is the umpteenth annual Christmas battle. I don't even know why I call it a Christmas battle anymore, because there's about 3 years in there where I should have won, and the judges just give it to Chris. Anyway, that's coming up December 12th, starting at 5 o'clock. But one of our judges, Mike Pincus, it lived in two of these, like, monstrosities, you know? Really, really, like, high-priced, high-end apartment buildings. All kinds of services, like the last one he was in, beautiful roof deck. TVs, you know, grill anybody could use, outside, pool on the roof kind of place. And, you know, you go over there and it was full of millennials. There were, like, millennials coming and going at all times. And these are, like, employed millennials. These are the people who, in past generations, would have discovered either car ownership or the train and bought a house out in the suburbs. They don't want to do that because they don't want to do the work. So they're buying these or renting these ridiculous modern high-rise condos that are going up all over the place. One of the consequences of that is apparently we don't need cars anymore. Or we don't need cars as we once did. General Motors, Mary Barra, one of the few women in the Fortune 500 to head a Fortune 500 company, announced this week that plants in Michigan, Ohio, Maryland, and Ontario, Canada will close by the end of 2019, taking with them 14,700 jobs. Now, yikes. Interestingly, 8,100 of those jobs, that's more than half, are actually going to be white-collar workers. So I'm guessing that they're either going to repurpose some of these plants or they're going to ship the factory workers around, or maybe GM is in a situation where they've got one executive for every 0.9 factory workers. You know, considering how automated these plants are these days, that would not be a shock. Anyway, the president's unhappy about this. Pierre Trudeau is unhappy about this, which means the liberal media will take notice. And GM also announced that they will stop manufacturing the Chevrolet Impala. Nothing of value was lost.
I like the emblem on the Impala, though.
Yeah, but the Impala is a bad car and always has been.
Oh, I'm aware of that. I'm just saying I'll miss the emblem.
It's like no one...
I'll miss being behind it in traffic. That's about it.
That's like saying you're going to miss the Pontiac Duster. No one misses the Duster. Okay? It was a bad car and it should have gone away. I couldn't believe they brought the Impala back in the first place because I was like, wait, wasn't that the worst car of the 70s? Oh, here it is again. So they're getting rid of the Impala. They're getting rid of the Chevrolet Volt, which is their electric gas engine, like, weirdo car. And they're getting rid of the Chevrolet Cruze, which is their little tiny thing. And the Buick LaCrosse, and potentially, not fully confirmed, but widely believed, that the Cadillac XTS and CT6 are also going away. So why is GM doing this? Well, to hear Mary Barra talk about it, the reason they're doing this is because GM has gone in a slightly different direction from the other Detroit automakers. Where everyone else has been focused on sales and market share, Mary Barra has been focused on delivering value to shareholders. So her plan has basically been, we are not going to discount these vehicles anymore. We're not going to live from sale to sale. We are going to make good cars. We are going to sell them for a reasonable price. And if Americans want to go chase discounts somewhere else, let them. Now, as a result of these decisions, GM has fallen to around 17.5% of the U.S. auto market. Interestingly, they have not moved from 17.5% of the U.S. auto market for the last 3 years, which is pretty interesting because everybody else is sort of like duking it out. And GM has said, this is our share. This is where we're going to live. We're happy here. And so they are getting rid of passenger cars. The other reason that they're getting rid of passenger cars, and by getting rid of passenger cars, they're going to have $6 billion extra cash on hand at the end of 2020. That's what all of these, stop making these cars, shut down these plants, put $6 billion in cash back in their hands.
Oh, that's such a good idea. To replace passenger cars with SUVs that use up three times as much gas.
This is where this gets interesting because they are actually following the lead of my beloved Ford Motor Company, which announced in April that by the end of 2022, you will no longer be able to buy a passenger car from Ford. There will be no more sedans except for the Mustang. That's it.
Mustang. I do like Mustangs.
The Mustang, by the way, has an F-150 engine in it. Jeez. That's why it goes that fast. It has a pickup truck engine under the hood. And if you get the good one,
it will end up taking just as much gas.
Yeah, it's got a V8 pickup engine under the hood and gets a whopping 15 miles to the gallon. So, you know, if you're hauling lumber.
So the days of like my car, which gets 25, or I think my car gets like 28. No more.
My Fiesta. You can mock me all you want for driving a Ford Fiesta. My Fiesta.
And I do.
Averages 30 miles to the gallon. And the majority of
I think mine's like 27, 28.
The majority of my driving is city. 30 miles to the gallon. I spend so little on gasoline every year. I go to the gas station once a week, whether I need to or not. And when the gas was up around $3 a gallon, I was going to the gas station maybe every 6 days, 5 days if I was doing a lot of driving.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm making out like a bandit. It's cheap to insure. It's cheap to repair. It's cheap to own. Not spend a lot of money on gasoline. I say let you people...
it's not going to be too cheap to repair now because you're not going to be able to get the parts.
10 years, they have to keep making the parts if they make a car.
Oh, okay. That was like my biggest thing I was really curious about.
I learned that because I am trading in my, Fiesta for a new one. So I have a student from Mongolia looking for a place to live. This is spam. So... Ford, no more passenger cars. Now Chevrolet, dumping a whole bunch of its passenger cars. The passenger car appears to be becoming an endangered species.
I love my passenger car.
In favor of the SUV and the crossover and the pickup truck.
All of the things that we should be moving in the other direction from.
I look at this and I say to myself, just you wait until the gas prices go up again.
That's what I'm saying, is everyone thinks this is a great idea, and then all of a sudden, it's going to be like $4 a gallon, and everyone's like, oh, I really miss my Corolla. I really miss my Honda Civic.
But at the same time, who's going to say that? Because all the millennials are moving into the city.
It's true. And I just realized I named two Japanese brands, and we're talking about GM.
Yeah. Well, that becomes an interesting dimension. That becomes an interesting dimension of this because somebody's got to keep making passenger cars. And maybe it's Hyundai. Maybe it's Toyota. Maybe it's whoever is still going to make. Because here's the thing. Ford Europe still going to make their passenger cars. Fiesta is the number one selling car in Europe.
It's basically going to mean that you have to, if you want to buy a passenger car, you have to get an import.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's... But it's going to be difficult for... Like, I remember in high school, I drove a Nissan Maxima, which is not an American car. I believe Nissan's Japanese, right?
Yes.
I was going
to
say...
Used to be called Datsun back in the day.
But they also have... This is the dumbest thing ever. They also have... affiliates with French companies, like a French company has like a big shareholder. And remember back,
I think it's Peugeot because they're the big one over there. Could be Renault, but I think it's Peugeot.
Remember back when I was in high school, so that would have been, let's see, it would have been the early 2000s. I forget what they even did, but we were supposed to be mad at France. Like they were staying out of something that we wanted them to get involved in, or vice versa, they were involved in something.
The French refused to join George Bush's international coalition to punish Osama bin Laden by having a war in Afghanistan.
How dare they?
Which really doesn't punish Osama bin Laden because he just runs and hides in Pakistan.
Yeah.
So the French said, we're not going to do that. And we decided we hate the French. And we had to call them freedom fries.
Yes.
For a little while.
Well, so when all of this is happening, this is how hardcore my point of the story is. This is how hardcore some people are about their cars. I went to my friend's house. And I parked my Maxima, not even in their driveway, just on the street in front of their car. He comes running out. Nope, 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 nope. I was like, is there something wrong, Mr. Best? You just get out of it. Down the street. You're parking it down the street. He said, why? He said, haven't you heard about France?
Yeah.
I turned around and was like, my car's Japanese.
Yeah.
We haven't hated them in, like, several decades. And he went into this whole spiel about it. And I look in their driveway. They have three cars. Every single one is either a Ford or a Chevy.
Yeah, yeah. Did he have these colors don't run bumper stickers on any of them?
But
because those were popular back in the day, too.
I probably did.
Don't forget the American Eagle, solar screen to conceal the gun rack in the back window of the pickup.
But it was funny. But I think about these people who are such loyalists to American cars, and especially like older people, they don't want to hoist up into an SUV. You know what I mean? Like they're going to want their dumb little thing that you drive.
I keep hearing about global warming is this thing, right? Everybody keeps saying like global warming is this. Like you're a millennial. You believe that global warming is this thing, right?
I do.
Like it's a thing and it's killing us all. So... instead of taking steps to reduce global warming, we're all going to drive SUVs. Like, where
is... That's the other thing that's
where is the logic in that?
About this?
And by the way, you can sit around, listening audience and friends of mine and anybody else, and complain about my global warming skepticism all day long. You can bitch your heart out about it. I don't waste water. I don't waste electricity. I drive one of the most economical cars on the market. I'm actually doing something to reduce my carbon footprint. And I do it every single day. So all you people running around in your SUVs talking about, oh, global warming's so bad and the storms are getting worse and the weather's bad. Why don't you get out of your giant gas-guzzling truck and get a passenger car? Why don't you go get an electric? Now, this is one of the things that GM says they're going to do, is we're gonna focus on electric vehicles. What they're not saying is they just signed a big deal to provide a fleet for an electric car developer working on autonomous cars. This is where they see their future. We're going to be the autonomous car supplier.
They do know that every test run that's been done with one of those has been a wild failure, right?
But it's generally believed that one way or another, we're going to fix that. And the way that we may fix that is to basically set up no-go areas within our cities, okay? Now, if you think about it, if you go to Downtown Crossing right now, it's blocked off, right? Mm. You can only walk through there. Same thing, Times Square, New York, there's a huge section of that that is now a pedestrian plaza.
Yeah, it's like literally you have to walk.
And cities have proven that you can shut down these thoroughfares without completely disrupting traffic. So what if the city of New York were to say everything between 25th and 70th and between 2nd and 6th Avenues is going to be autonomous vehicles only? You can still get around it if you're driving, but if you want to get into that part of the city, you got to get into the automatic vehicle. All the traffic jams disappear. You don't have any pedestrian accidents anymore because you've reconfigured the city.
But there'd be traffic jams around that rectangle.
No, because the autonomous vehicles, if you set them up properly and have a single guidance system controlling everything, which mm-hmm. is the ultimate goal of this, will automatically navigate through intersections. Like, you don't need traffic lights anymore. The cars will figure out the optimal way to get from point A to point B.
Oh, no, I'm saying...
And you'll never have traffic.
I'm saying
again.
The normal cars outside of this rectangle.
Well, who cares about them? You know, you're going to be stupid enough to drive into the city.
I do those
people. No, but I... But this is what they're saying is going to be in 50 years. And in 50 years, it would not surprise me if we had one or two major cities in the world, and I would say New York and London are probably prime candidates, where an entire section of the heart of the city...
I see what you're saying, yeah.
...is autonomous vehicles only. Nobody owns these cars. You just get into it, you wave your smartphone at it, you tell it where you want to go, and then it charges you for...
Gas.
For the distance that you travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a taxi without a driver.
Yeah. And everybody else is on the outskirts. Now, if you mow down Harlem and you mow down Tribeca, you can have parking on either end of this. And, well, people like Harlem and Tribeca.
They do.
So maybe that idea doesn't work. But I was going to say, you could have parking on either end. They spent a lot of money on that Freedom Tower. You could 9/11 Memorial is going to have to stay. But you could have parking on either end of this.
I guess we can keep that memorial from one of the biggest disasters that ever happened.
But all of this change is happening in large part, because of something that we started noticing 10 years ago. Millennials don't buy cars. They're not even getting driver's licenses.
I don't know if that's true. I think urban millennials, yes. Most of my friends that grew up in New York didn't get their license.
But that's always been true in New York. Like, there's plenty of people, lifer New Yorkers who have never seen anything other than the inside of a cab and are never going to get a driver's license. And they find themselves out in the country once and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. Where's the cab? And their lives fall apart. But this was a huge percentage. And it wasn't just urban millennials. It was suburban millennials. Because they were taking public transportation. And they were riding bikes. And then Uber came along. So they're not buying cars. And the auto industry is sitting there and they're saying, well, wait a minute. We're watching our customer base erode. Because the whole way that the auto industry has always attempted to operate is we make really cheap compact cars, which are starter cars. Or it used to be they just made really cheap cars. Those were starter cars. So that you get out of high school, you get your driver's license, you buy a Ford, okay? Then for the rest of your life, Ford is going to try and keep you locked into the Ford. And when you get to a certain income level, they're going to be like, oh, you don't want the Ford Focus, you want the Ford Taurus. And then when you get to a higher income level, they're going to be like, what you really want is a Lincoln. That's our luxury brand. And you just sort of stay with that one brand. And they give you all kinds of financial incentives to get you to stay with the brand. Okay. Left to my own devices, buying a new car, I might go and buy a Subaru because Subarus are great in New England. The reality for me is I can trade in my old Fiesta and get a brand new Fiesta and have a lower monthly payment than I was making for my old Fiesta. So it makes perfect sense for me to do that. I like the car. The car is incredibly economical to run. And I need a car because I live in the suburbs.
The thing is, though, that I will say, like, to poke a hole in your millennials aren't getting licenses or cars thing, is the majority of the millennials that I know, at least, again, obviously I know the poorer ones, but even ones, you know, that have other good, like, that have otherwise good jobs that work good day jobs during the day, a lot of them drive Uber, drive for Uber Eats, drive for Caviar, drive for Ritual, drive for Lyft. I mean, who drives for Lyft anymore? But like, with that in mind, it's a lot of, it's like I'm trying to think of before those things existed, what the equivalent would be.
Buying like, a car.
No.
And driving yourself.
No, but I'm saying like before Uber and stuff like that existed, I'm like to work for them, it would be like the equivalent, like if you worked in an office during the week, but then did two shifts of bartending a week.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same sort of thing. And because of that, like, most of my friends, I'd say, and even my friends who aren't in, like, one of the poor comedy hooligans that I play with, but, like, most of my friends have cars. Like, my cousin Heather is a nurse. She has a car. Then, on the flip side, her husband is a drummer. He has a car. Like, it's more of us have them than you think. That's the thing is typically all these kids that you see taking Uber, a lot of them have cars. They're just taking Uber so they don't drive drunk.
Yes and no.
Or so they don't have to find parking.
We're both, you're involved in the comedy scene. I still remain on the fringes of the comedy scene telling these kids they're doing it wrong. And back in my day, it was funny. How many of them can you think of who don't own cars? And I can think of a very, very large number of them who don't own cars.
That's true.
And these are the younger 20-somethings. See, you're not really in the problem millennial age.
Oh, wait. Can you say that again? I think my headphones...
You're not really...
I think my headphones are malfunctioning.
You're not really in the problem millennial age.
WMFO, you recorded that, right?
You're Generation X adjacent, and so you still maintain some of the habits and traditions that my generation had. You're not full millennial, is what I'm saying.
I'm not full. I'm like millennial light.
You're millennial
diet
light.
Diet millennial.
You're not full millennial. Now, comedy... Chase Mullane.
Yes.
You're involved in that profession. Do you do comedy at the same, like, conveniently located place down the street from your apartment every single time?
Negatory.
No, you need to go places. You need to get places. So here we have all of these 20-something comics who theoretically want to pursue this as a career, who theoretically understand that this is predominantly a road gig, and they don't have cars. So they spend all of their time bumming rides off of people who are going to, oh, you're going to this show? Oh, you're going to that show? Or they take an Uber, and they're like, hey, can I get a ride home? Or they take an Uber, which is all well and good until you get a gig out in the middle of Vermont or up in the White Mountains, and you're like, how much is that Uber going to cost me? And it's more than you're going to make doing the show that night. So then you've got to bum a ride off of somebody. And it's like, it used to be that the comic without a car was extremely rare. And more often than not, if you came across a stand-up comic who didn't have a car, it was because said comic no longer had a driver's license because of past infractions. Yes.
Or because the car they had was so crappy that it finally gave out.
Right. And it's like, we knew who those handful of people were, and you knew if you were booked on a gig with so-and-so, the phone call was coming. If you were the guy that had the car, and you'd be giving them a ride.
Oh, yes. I think I recently got out of a friendship. Recently got out of a friendship that I was blinded to not really being a friendship, but that was one of those things where it was like, anytime I would do a show with her, it was just, it's like, well, guess I'm driving to Somerville to pick someone up.
Yeah.
Because I know she's not going to take an Uber, take the D to where it's convenient for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, door-to-door service is expected. Don't forget that.
And for those of you listening who do this to your friends, give them gas money.
Yeah.
That chick owes me like $3,000 from the past 6 or whatever years.
Give them gas money. Offer to go halvesies on the tolls.
Yeah.
And it is generally considered polite to buy your driver beer, unless your driver is the designated driver, in which case it's polite to buy them two beers.
Or at least like a burger or something.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? Pay your share. Because the person who has the car is paying for the car, the fuel, the insurance, the repairs, the cleaning, brake changes, motor oil, all of the things that go along with owning a car. All of the things that millennials seem to like to avoid.
Like responsibility?
I don't know that it's responsibility per se. I don't know that that's really what's going on here. I think it's more the tasks of ownership that they don't appreciate. They gravitate toward condominiums and they gravitate toward apartments because they're not responsible for anything. They don't have to do the upkeep. Nobody's going to come along and be like, oh, you've got to re-side this. Or you've got to paint this. Or you've got to put a new roof on.
They have to come upon that idea themselves.
It's an apartment. You never have to do it. Same thing with owning a car. It's like, who wants to go get their tires rotated? Who wants to go get an oil change? You know, who wants to have to go to a gas station when I can just get an Uber and I'm wherever I want to be? And it's like, financially, I don't know that they're doing any better or worse than those of us who own things. You know, particularly where cars are concerned, what you're spending to ride around in an Uber over the course of a month probably comes damn close to my car payment.
Well, it depends. See, that's the thing. It depends on how strategically you do it.
Yeah.
Because, like, for example, I am broke right now. Guys, please go to restaurants. Thanksgiving is over. You're not full anymore. But, like, I need to get my oil changed. My car can only take synthetic.
Oh, boy, is that a scam?
So, oh no, trust me. I actually spoke to like a mechanic I'm friends with.
No, somebody put synthetic in it once and said, hey, this is great, and didn't tell you that for the rest of your life
I have to give you synthetic. So instead of $30 to change my oil, like most people, it's 65 or 70.
Yeah. Boy, that's a rip.
Yes. But so my car is sitting out there and it's still the maintenance like just went on. It's still below, you know, they give you the mileage of when it's like you have to do it by then.
You really don't, but
it's still well below that anyhow. But I'm sitting here being like, okay, on the one hand, even though you shouldn't, I can still drive it when the oil's getting there until I can get the money.
You can drive it for a year with that oil light on. Lord knows I've done it.
But I'm not gonna be able to buy another car anytime soon, so I try to take care of my little lady out there. But it just sounded like I was talking about something else. Gross.
I put nearly $200,000 miles on my Sable. I know you can get away with it.
But it's one of those things where, like, I think to myself, well, okay, but on the flip side of that, like, so I'm sitting here complaining about how expensive it is, but on the flip side of that, I'm completely broke. If I didn't have a car that I could drive after the oil light goes on, I wouldn't be able to take an Uber. I'd be walking from the South Shore to Medford to do this radio show.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I'm sorry. I wasn't broke when I got here. I just put $4 in my car.
Which means I'm buying Shay's beers after the show tonight.
Yep, that was my subtle way of telling you.
Yeah. Gee, it's too bad the ATM wasn't working when I went to the bank machine earlier today. I gotta go take care of that.
But that's the thing is that I don't, like, it's a matter of that maybe even if it does, and like I said, like, if you do it strategically, you wait for the fares to be lower because that does happen in a manner of 15 sure. minutes. If you do it strategically, it can theoretically cost less than the actual act of owning a car. But the cost in terms of convenience, in terms of if you're in a bind like I'm in right now, that cost is way higher. Because especially, there have been times, I remember... when I took a boat over to, my mom had rented a house in Long Island. So I took the boat over from New London in Connecticut. And by the time I got there, I came after work. So it was like not late at night, but it was like probably like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And so I call them for a ride and it's my family's first day in the Cape. So how do you think they spent or in Long Island? How do you think they spent the day?
Drinking.
Yes.
That's what you do on Long Island.
Yeah.
It's just especially, one big self-service bar.
I would say, why do you think my family likes it so much? The beach? Yeah, sure. Also the wineries. So I called my brother, and I called my brother who was the one that was supposed to pick me up, and he's like, you know, I'm gonna ask Megan.
Yeah.
Megan, she wants to talk to you. Hi. Yeah. Did you get here? I'm like, yeah. One of you dum-dums is supposed to come pick me up.
Now I'm sober and angry.
I was like, you sound like you're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm sitting on the side of a beach next to a dock in the middle of nowhere.
With no booze.
With no booze. And no businesses around me open.
It's Long Island. Sooner or later, somebody walks by and offers you one.
And so I literally just sat there throwing rocks in the water for an hour. But I tried to get, they were like, oh, just get an Uber. Try to get an Uber. There's maybe three in that entire area of Long Island.
Because all the Uber drivers are drunk, too.
Exactly. And things get started and end much earlier there. But so every single time I tried to get an Uber, it said all Uber drivers in the area are unavailable at the moment. So I finally ended up kicking it old school. I called a cab.
Yeah.
And it took the cab like an hour to get there, too. But then I walked in and I looked at all of them. I was like, I don't want to hear it. Get me some alcohol. Make me some food. I'm sitting down and doing nothing until there's that in front of me.
Nice.
But that's the thing is that it's like, that's a perfect example of when had there been someone sober to come pick me up, actually owning a car is much more convenient than Uber.
That's why you always get to the island in the afternoon and not at night.
Yes, tell my boss that.
I know. The later it goes, the less chance that you're actually going to get picked up. And those of us who go to islands all know this. Do you like owning a car?
Yeah.
Owning a car is a scam. I mean, it depreciates as soon as you drive it off the lot. It's a scam, but... The great America. I mean, you've driven across the country.
I was going to say.
I've driven across the country.
My car is my best friend, honestly.
Yeah.
That's why whenever Aggie breaks, I'm just like, you remember actually Aggie broke on this street that we're on while my car was acting up. And then we came out after the show one night. I went to start it. No dice.
Alternator gone.
Oh, and starter and battery, because whoever hooked up the alternator to my brand new battery did it wrong. So the car was entirely just running off the battery as soon as the alternator started going.
Yeah.
Without it recharging.
No, that's what happens. That's what
I was going to say.
You always replace the battery when the alternator goes.
But the other thing, it begins with an S. It's a very car term, like stifle.
Solenoid.
There we go. I knew it began with an S. All of that needs to be replaced. Yeah. And those are the times I'm like, I wish I didn't own a freaking car.
Yeah.
But then...
But then it's a nice summer day, and you're like, I'm going to go drive 150 miles.
Exactly.
And find a beach. And it's like, Maine!
Yeah, I love having a car.
Yeah. And this is the part where I think millennials miss the mark, you know, because, yeah, it's great not to have that responsibility. It's great not to have all the headaches that come with ownership. But your world is limited to...
Where Uber
will take you, yeah. Or where the train line ends.
Yeah, like when I was driving across the country, I was in, I think it was Indiana, and I was in the middle of nowhere, and I saw a sign saying, like, this way to the Wilbur Wright birthplace.
Yeah.
And I was like, this would be a cool thing to do in Indiana. By the way, it's not. He lived there for like a month and then they moved. It's all like totally just to get people to go to this random town in Indiana. But nonetheless, I had the option of doing it.
Said town, by the way, is surrounded by corn, as is everything in Indiana.
Yes. And you think, oh my God, this is a lot of corn. And then you get to Nebraska and you're like, that was not a lot of corn.
Yeah.
This is a lot of corn.
Yeah. And then you see the largest grain elevators in the world and you're like, oh my God, what is going on out here? They got grain elevators like New Jersey has liquid natural gas tanks. I mean, it's crazy. But this started happening. The auto industry first started noticing this interruption probably about 5 years ago. Was when the first reports came out and they were like, huh, you know, the young people aren't buying the cars. And they were like, all right, you know what? Maybe they're going to wait until they get out of college and then they'll buy the cars. And the young people get out of college and they weren't buying the cars. And they were moving into the cities. And the cities responded by welcoming them with open arms and putting up giant glass apartment towers and condo towers all over the place, which the millennials happily moved into and then said, oh, I guess I don't need a car at all. So Detroit is now finding itself with that critical customer path. We're going to hook you in when you're young and we're going to keep you upgrading on our brand for your whole life. The first link in that has now severed.
Disappeared.
Severed. And they're losing, you know, depending on the brand, they're losing somewhere between 18% and 30% of their market just to people who aren't buying cars anymore.
Well, and the funny thing about that too is I'd say that where that gap, I don't need a car ends is probably with the first child. Because that's when my sister has had never owned a car other than like my parents bought her a Mercury Sable when she was in high school. But other than that, my sister had never owned a car. She bought one for the first time 2 years ago. Why? Kids.
Yeah.
Because like coming up to, you know, like even things like coming up to my mom's for her birthday or her Mother's Day or something, having two toddlers on a train. Ugh.
Yeah, not fun.
But that's the thing is that it's a matter of, I do understand that I do understand what they're doing, which is trying to restructure and revamp and go with the times as to how people now buy cars. Because it's not like people are not buying cars anymore. It's just that it's at a different time, under different circumstances.
Well, it's not even that, because some of them never will buy cars. And it's got Detroit sitting there. By the way, the one good thing about this is that when the zombies come, the millennials will not be able to get out of town.
Uh-huh.
And the zombies will eat them as everyone with cars drives to safety.
Honestly,
so thank you for that, millennials.
I was going to say, honestly, that was going to be another one of my points as to why I do like having a car is...
Zombies. You can drive away from the zombies.
Yes, Derek, zombies. No. Well, with zombies, in an emergency, like... It's
yeah, an emergency. Yeah. You go sit in traffic with everybody else.
Well, but like, well, for example, like my brother, I'm still to this day angry at you about this, Danny, but I'll get over it maybe when we're 50. But my brother's senior year of college, he really wanted to take the car that he and I had driven, the Maxima, to college with him. He wanted to have a car for his senior year, which of course driving it to New Orleans and then all over the place and then back ultimately destroyed it. So it was already old and, you know, as a Maxima, we beat the crap out of it. But so he drove it to New Orleans for his senior year. 3 weeks into his senior year, Hurricane Katrina happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember just sitting there being like, as much as I was mad that he took Maximus the Maxima away, thank God he had that car with him. Because if he didn't, I mean, especially because all of his friends left except for him and one other of his frat brothers, because they had so many hurricanes there where they make people evacuate and it's for no reason because very little damage happens. So they were like, oh, we're just going to wait this out. And they're sitting watching the news at 2:00 in the morning, understanding the gravity of this. And they look at each other and we're like, yeah, we should leave. But they had that option because they had a car.
Yeah.
And that, I think about that sort of thing all the time. Like, Anytime there's a terrorist threat, anytime.
Yeah, you don't want to be sitting around waiting for FEMA to roll the bus in. You want to be in your vehicle and getting
the hell out of Dodge.
Far away from as possible. Now, one of the interesting aspects of this, and it to me will be fascinating to see how this plays out, is, as I mentioned at the top of this, President Trump is furious.
Oh,
and
yes.
Pierre Trudeau is furious. And the governors of these states and the government in Ontario are furious. How? And President Trump brings up a good point, which is that General Motors has been on the receiving end of a tremendous amount of government support through the years. Not the least of which was the Postal Service buying all those Jeeps. Or actually, that bailed out Chrysler. But the government buying large numbers of GM cars for its fleet.
Yeah, like for its things it needs cars
right.
for.
The government giving zero interest loans to General Motors in the wake of the 2008 financial collapse.
Oh, you mean that fun year I graduated from college and none of us could get jobs that year?
So on the one hand, the president's sitting there and he's like, you know, the American taxpayer has done a heck of a lot for you guys. But on the other hand, government can't sit there and tell a company like GM, hey, you got to keep these plants open and keep making these cars for the sake of jobs, because nobody wants them. And that is a waste of resources. And that is a waste of money. Now, government wastes the taxpayers' money better than any private business person could ever think. But it's a little surprising to me to see Donald Trump, who gets this stuff. Say what you will about our orange president. He gets business. He gets the spreadsheet. He gets profit and loss. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see him sit there and chastise GM and basically say, you have to do something about this, because he knows full well what he's asking.
Yeah.
He's asking them to take losses for the sake of keeping jobs. And under no circumstances would he ever do that himself.
I was going to say, it's like the biggest... It's one of the more hypocritical requests that someone can make.
Yeah, he knows, and he knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows exactly what he's saying, and it's like, you got a point. You're the jobs president. Yeah. You're trying to keep
it's one of those things like this coming from anyone else, given the bailouts, given the amount of help. It would be like, yeah, that was a very presidentially correct thing to say. But because it's coming from him, it really does bother me, though, this whole thing. Because honestly, like I said, I mean, I just love to drive. It makes me feel bad that there are all of these kids in their 20s that don't get to experience the, like, and, like, stopping just in time to not rear-end somebody and, like, getting to go to the drive-thru and, like, getting to drive 90 because there's nothing in Nebraska. Like, it's a lot of really great experiences in my life have involved driving.
Some of them can't put down the Facebook long enough to do any of that. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Coming up in just 15 minutes, On the Town with Mikey D, here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, the strangest things from the past week and our favorite things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story. One night, I was at a bar.
I was having fun with my friends. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react. I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is the illustrious and balding Derek Gary.
Hi, balding.
You call him like you see him, yeah?
Balded. Balding is long done.
No, but you still have some little...
Yeah, that's not going anywhere. That's perma hair.
Give it time.
No, it's staying.
We're wrapping things up here. I'm so mean to you. It's just because you're so mean to me. We're wrapping things up here, but first we want to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past and coming week. For me, San Diego Man has decided to help out Paradise High School students and staff by giving $1,000 checks out after the campfire ravaged their community. The checks were given out at nearby Chico High School on yesterday evening. As many as 980 students and 105 staff members, from the principal to the janitors to the bus drivers, were expected to receive them. Bob Wilson is the man who did this. He's the chairman of Duckett Wilson, a development company and over 6 fish market seafood restaurants, and said he made the decision to help the Paradise High community after reading an article that told of the loss of the high school experience for the kids in the now burned out town. He said, I made this decision within 2 or 3 minutes of reading the news, and I could put a smile on their faces, and I thought I would give these kids something. So they could have some good times, I could put a smile on their faces and maybe lift their spirits, like your spirits are supposed to be lifted when you're in high school. But yeah, as many as 900 students lost their homes in the fire, which killed 88 and took out nearly 14,000 residences. He chose $1,000 personalized checks because he said if he gives them to them directly, they can spend it however they need, whatever that's going to mean. And he considered gift cards and going through donation organizations, but decided it was too indirect and did not want anything to be... Because, you know, sometimes with a gift card, it's like, oh, well, we'll give them $995 for the fee of doing... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he just took out his checkbook and boom, 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 boom. Which, I mean, I know a lot of this... Doing this is a great PR move for this man. And I'm not discounting.
But I don't think he's about, because I heard one interview with him where he said, I know this is not going to make anybody whole. I know this is not going to rebuild the school. I know this is not going to give anyone their house back. But it is going to show everybody that someone cares.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing, is the more I read about him, the more I was just like, this is, what a great thing. I mean, the guy's, if not a billionaire, a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
And the fact that I love hearing stories like this where he said, like I just said his quote, he was just watching the news 2 or 3 minutes in, he's like, I got to do something for these people. Like, I have all this money. They don't have a house anymore.
Yeah.
And obviously you're not going to rebuild an entire town on your dime, especially a town you're not from. But like you said, it's just the gesture of, you're not alone in this. Like, yep. There are people. And I like too that, I mean, this man... giving this might guilt some other people into being like, you know what? I make $600,000 a year. Maybe I can donate like $100. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, these teenagers are all like, I can get a new smartphone and play Fortnite again. Yay! You know, it's, yeah. Okay, kids, holiday things that you might want to do. Zoo Lights is open again at the Stone Zoo. If you have not been to Zoo Lights, basically they take the zoo, which has animals in it, and they put lights up everywhere. So you get beautiful holiday displays and you get live animals. It is awesome. It used to be the zoo was just kind of closed all winter long. Yeah. And, you know, now you can go and walk around and you get to see the animals and you get to enjoy the lights. Certain days they have Santa available for photos and for the kids to hang out. You can hang out by the campfire, make some s'mores. The online pricing for this is pretty darn good. If you go on a Monday or a Tuesday, $8 for an adult, $7 for a child. Friday and Saturday is $12 for an adult, $10 for a child. So it's, you know, it's a reasonably priced way to go and learn about animals and have a nice holiday experience. It is running from now until early January. Weekends and weekdays. You can learn more at zoonewengland.org, zoonewengland.org. Look up the Zoo Lights at Stone Zoo. Having been to Zoo Lights last year and having been to the renovated Stone Zoo this year, if you haven't been in a while, absolutely go and check this out because they're doing a killer job upgrading the zoo. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they incorporate the lights into the new displays that they have. So
yeah, I was gonna say I might have to hit that up.
Should be a fun time. Animals and Christmas lights. You know, try and find. I'll give you two pieces of advice. Number one, don't go on the first or second Saturday night of the season.
That's very good advice.
Which are these two Saturday nights coming up because it tends to be a zoo in the unpleasant way,
in the human zoo way.
Yeah, and really, really cold nights. Not a lot of fun to be out there. So you know, if you get if there's a little snow blowing around, it's not bad. But when it's bone chilling cold, there's lots of angry kids running around everywhere, so avoid that. Where's your music at?
Where's your head?
Someday the buttons will work.
Fingers crossed. WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture by telling you that's the thing that happened, which is basically the weirdest, oddest news story we can find from last week. For me, this is actually from a couple weeks ago, but I had to include it when I found it. And it's from our favorite place to tell stories in the section from
Florida.
Florida! A Florida man was sentenced to 40 years in prison after he plotted to place bombs in Target stores along the eastern seaboard, hoping to profit when the retailer stock price dropped. Mark Charles Barnett, 50, of Ocala, was convicted in July on federal charges of attempted arson, possession of an unregistered destructive device, and making an unregistered destructive device. Witnesses testified that he offered another person $10,000 to place bombs hidden in food packages in Target stores in Florida, Virginia, and New York. Instead, that person notified the FBI, and Barnett was arrested. Evidence of the trial showed that Barnett had bought bomb components and assembled at least 10 improvised explosive devices, which he concealed in packages for stuffing mix, breakfast bars, and pasta. He offered the money to place them in 10 stores, theorizing that the company's stock price would drop because of bad publicity, allowing him to buy shares cheaply before they rebounded.
This is a little bit like Lex Luthor's plan to create oceanfront real estate in the first Superman movie.
I was just going to say, doesn't this sound like comic book bull?
By firing a missile into the San Andreas Fault. I mean, what? This is what happens when you live in a warm place. You got too much time to sit around and just think about stuff, and you come up with ideas like, oh, I'll blow up some grocery sections and get a deal on the stock. Really? That's your plan, guy? Please tell me he's going away for a long time.
And ask 40 years.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good, start.
And ask someone, the thing I don't get the most about it is paying someone 10 grand. Obviously, the person's going to tell on you. You're talking about blowing up retail stores. Why can't you just do it yourself if you think this is such an awesome plan?
Didn't he at least offer some stock, some shares to the guy? Like, yeah, I'm holding out for options. Cambridgeshire, that's in the United Kingdom, kids. Here's another reason to hate blow-up holiday decorations. Traffic was snarled in Wisbech after a two-story inflatable Santa came loose in the wind and blew across the road, blocking all lanes. Two men got out of their cars and attempted to puncture the rogue elf to get him off the road, but Santa endured thanks to Christmas magic. So everybody had to just sit there and wait for Santa to blow off the highway before they could get where they were going. Folks,
oh my goodness.
Don't put that inflatable crap in your yards, is what I'm saying. Don't like it. Never liked it. This is WMFO Medford on the Tell Mikey D, coming your way in just about 60 seconds. Programming note, it is a holiday tradition here at WMFO that Chris Earle and I come in, and I play better Christmas music than he does, but the judges give him the win anyway. It will be our annual Christmas holiday music battle taking place 2 weeks from tonight. That is December 12th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. So you're going to want to check that out. Also, did you know we got the holidays creeping in on our show this year?
You do.
So our normal, the week of Christmas, we're going to be on the 26th. I'm going to be doing a special Boxing Day show for that, no shay. And then we will be back with the best of 2018 for the first Wednesday in January. So until next week, Shay Spillane.
I love you.
And I am Derek Gary. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.